Paul Scott. Today I'm talking, having a quick update call with Simon Tucker of SRT, Software Radio Technology. I do hold shares personally. I'm not receiving a fee for this call, and I'm not giving a recommendation or financial advice. Good, so I think we're covered there. Hi, Simon, good to talk to you again.
My pleasure. Thank you for your interest.
And, okay, just really a few quick questions today. I should mention the webinar. I misread the RNS. You're actually doing a webinar next Tuesday, the 14th of June, aren't you? So just to
flag that's right, because I'm abroad this week. So
right, okay.
Not able to do it until then.
Yes, okie dokie. Just a couple of quick questions then on today's accounts. The profit and turnover were, I think, slightly ahead of where you'd indicated they were. So that all, the P&L all looks fine, as expected, slightly better than expected. But on the balance sheet, I noticed that inventories and debtors both look very high compared with turnover.
Yep.
So I just wonder if you could expand on that.
Sure. With our project business, which is growing rapidly as we convert projects from our validated sales opportunity pipeline, the billing is equally lumpy. We had some billings prior to year-end, and so the debtors reflect that, and then the cash gets paid normally as per the terms of the contract. So, you know, this year they might seem high relative to turnover. Next year they might seem very low, but then an invoice could be raised the day after the year-end. In terms of stock, your other question, we had a stock of Class A's, which we had originally purchased for the long-awaited US mandate, which was a bit of a damp squib thus far. And so we still have those on stock, but we're now selling through those into other markets in Asia and Europe. And we expect that most of those will go in fairly short order into one of the projects in Asia. And in fact, we'll end up having to make more for the US market separately as that starts to come in, albeit belatedly.
Right. Okay. So there's no issue then with stock, not dilapidation. What's the word? Obsolete stock.
No. And it's a question. It's a good question you've asked, because I often get asked that. You know, we're not selling bananas, and you know, AIS is a standard that applies equally in Japan and the United States and Europe and China. And so, you know, that same product that we made for the United States is sold in all the markets that we sell into. So, you know, the AIS standards don't go off. Those products are always valid, and we have clear homes for them to go.
Yeah, okay, brilliant. Just looking then, I mean, given that your shares have done very well in the last 3 months, I mean, more than doubled to a market cap of about 50 million now,
yep.
Which obviously is a pretty punchy market cap based on the historic numbers. So, so really the bulk of the company's value rests on future expectations, doesn't it? So I wonder if we could really focus the rest of the call on that. So, could you maybe talk us through then what's in the £70 million contracted future order book?
I can't talk about it in too much detail because we have confidentiality. Mm. It's a big national project, which has all sorts of security sensitivities. That is predominantly a project in Asia, where, as we announced earlier this year, that will be implemented in three phases over up to 3 years. At the moment, we're sort of halfway through phase one of that, and starting the planning of phase two slightly earlier than we anticipated, but that still needs to be specced out. I've seen people's comments and listened to people say, but they assume it's, you know, oh, it's going to be a third, and third in each of the 3 years, etc. These projects are not quite as simple as that, and the weighting in the different phases is still under discussion. And a lot of that is then relevant to the infrastructure on which you put these things in. So, for example, the boats may all be available to put transponders on, but you need to train the people to put them on the boats. And where are those people available, and does it take you a year to train them up before you put the transponders on? If you need to supply radars and CCTV, you may have 50 or 60 existing buildings on which to put them on, but you need another 20 to complete the coverage. So, therefore, you do the first 50 or 60, and then the other 20 once they spend a year, 18 months building the buildings. So all of that is what is going on at the moment. But I suppose in summary to your question, it's a mixture of software, and it's a mixture of hardware, which is delivered to that particular custom, which for their money gives them a state-of-the-art maritime monitoring system, which enables them to track their boats and differentiate between the bad guy and the good guy. Because otherwise, as our own authorities are finding on the South Coast, all you see is hundreds of radar dots, and you have three patrol boats. Who's the bad guy? You know, I'm sure you on your boat fishing, you don't really want to have suddenly somebody with a machine gun pointing at you because they decided that you were the one of the blobs that was of interest. Whereas you're always out there fishing, whether you've got a boat or not, Paul, I don't know.
No, I haven't, sadly. So really then, I think I read somewhere, it might have been one of the broker notes, that they were talking about a phasing of some years 1, 2, and 3 on the big contract. They were talking about something like as extreme as 3,790. I mean, is that accurate?
I'm not going to be... I have a good idea what it's going to be. We're not going to announce until we know exactly what it's going to be. Because as I said, there's big national projects. People want to do things at different times and stuff. I think it's a very conservative phasing that we put out when we first signed the deal, because we wanted to be conservative in our sort of new way of communicating the market, where we don't want to say anything specific until the ink is dried on the contracts. But what's interesting about that particular contract is that was in our validated sales pipeline at a third of the value that it ultimately came in at. So we have this concept of, you know, you've got this multi-billion-dollar maritime domain market, and we're talking to all sorts of people in countries and all sorts of things, and you can easily spend your life going to see people around the world. But the 80-20 rule is, on the sales side, you want to spend 80% of your time on those contracts that are likely to come in, and that is our validated sales pipeline, where we know people have got the budget, they have a real imperative, they've normally got the political frame in place. We've given them proposals, et cetera. And they, if you can imagine that as a conveyor belt going at different speeds, they're now falling in. So that particular contract was valued. I mean, had we had the conversation 2 weeks before we signed, at substantially less than that. But because of their particular security concerns, it was ramped up.
Okay. And that's
good for us.
Good stuff. So the biggest contract then, is that absolutely binding then, you know, in terms of it being a contract, you know?
Yep.
So we can hang our hat on that 70 million figure, can we?
Yep. I mean, the only caveat I would say, because I think, you know, one has to be realistic about these things, is you're dealing with governments. And so, you know, if a government decides that it wants to change its mind, it changes its mind. But
yes.
This is why I said, right, my last comment, it's very important to understand people's imperatives for these things. And maritime domain security is now the number one concern on a lot of lists of MODs and coast guards and the like, particularly in Asia and the Middle East. And so I think it's highly unlikely that that there'd be any problem with this contract whatsoever.
Okay, great. And then just actually, you mentioned the phrase validated sales opportunity pipeline, which I saw in the RNS today. That is saying £200 million, which, I mean, is a huge figure. I mean, it's almost 20 times your current annual turnover. So, I mean, could you just, what do you mean exactly by validated sales opportunity?
Validated sales opportunity means it's we have a lot of people who will email us and say, we've heard about what you're doing in the Middle East. I mean, Bahrain has been a great showcase where we completed a project in the space of 7 months, and today they're monitoring the whole of the Gulf from a state-of-the-art control room, all supported by Jervis, and we would like to do the same. That, yes, that's a sales opportunity. It's in no way, shape, or form validated. It's in no way, shape, or form something that, beyond cursory sales visits, would be investing lots of time in demos. A validated sales opportunity is where we have had a series of meetings with the decision maker, be that a Coast Guard or Ministry of Defence, where we know that they have budget. We've probably heard about that opportunity via a couple of partners. We've provided proposals and demonstrations to them, and we're helping them, and this is the key, having gone through all of that, we're helping them going through their planning process to implement these projects. I think that there is perhaps because you know, the PR always tells you to try and simplify these things down to you know, three steps and you're done. You know, the reality is these are huge national projects, and you need to help them identify, you know, where are they going to put an AIS coast station? Is the connectivity good enough? Is there power there? If there isn't power there, how do they get power there? Where are they going to put the servers and the databases? Who's going to control it politically? Who's going to put them on the boats? Do the fishermen like it? No, you need to win the hearts and minds. All of that stuff. Once you get to that stage and you're talking that through and you're engaging with all the different stakeholders, that's a real, these people don't invest their time. I mean, they're running countries. They do not invest their time at that point if they're not serious. At that point, that becomes a validated sales pipeline. You are, you're no longer reading the brochure in the car showroom. You're reading the lease agreement, and you really are, you've got your credit card on the table.
Yeah, I see. No, that's interesting.
But it's not closed. You know, it's still got that time to go to close.
So I suppose really the main risk factor is delay, isn't it? Long delays on these things.
Yeah, from our perspective, it's delay. I mean, I wouldn't want them all to come in today. Mm. You know, I'd like them to drop in every few months, because there's an awful, you know, the work starts actually once they're signed. Your customer support team has to go out and you have to do surveys of sites, and a lot of these are in the middle of nowhere. We've got a project in South America, and you know, one of the locations is a no-go area according to the Foreign Office in the UK because of terrorism and getting kidnapped and stuff.
Oh, really?
So well, that's the harsh reality of it all.
Yeah.
So whilst it looks like a big figure compared to our capitalization, I would say that you'll see that grow considerably as these some of the sales opportunities further down the line get to that point where we're helping them plan their implementation.
Okay. And last question for me then. How confident are you that there won't be disappointments in the future? As we've had a few setbacks in the past, haven't we?
Well,
I'm trying to be diplomatic.
I'm always a confident fellow. I'm very confident. I think, you know, looking at Simon Rogers, our chairman's statement today, who's takes a very measured approach. We've put out the facts of the matter, and I think people need to remember in the last 6 months, we signed two big national maritime domain awareness projects. This validated sales pipeline isn't something that's just sort of made up. This is the product of years of building up our technologies and products. And it's one of the reasons why we've not amended any market forecasts until we've got these things under contract and we know the exact phasing. And once we do that, then we will take the next step and re-advise the market on what our revenues will look like this year and next year. But I think it's highly unlikely, if not impossible, that we'd be disappointing anybody in that respect. And I think if anybody does 5 minutes on Google and looks at maritime domain awareness and what's happening in the South China Sea, where I'll be this week in the Philippines, speaking at a security conference there, or in the Middle East, where you have, you know, big problems from between the GCC countries and Iran and places like that. This is now the hot topic, and through a bit of luck, AIS has become a critical technology in it. I mean, this is the key. Why is some little company from Somerset featuring all of these things? It's because AIS has been adopted as a critical technology, and we are the dominant player. That gives us a strategic position at the table, which we can then leverage. And now that we have things like RAIN under our belt, we have a solid reference where we deliver. And if you're a nation looking to secure your border and you want AIS, you don't want to mess around. And that's making it much easier for us from a sales standpoint. And obviously that comes with the logistical challenges, which is why we've expanded our customer support. So I think we're in really good stead as a result of being able to spend the last 5-6 years getting here.
That sounds great. Okay, well, I'm done in terms of my questions. So any final points you want to make, Simon?
No, I think you've covered all the questions. So thank you for your interest.
No, thanks for your time today. And, good luck. Let's hope things continue to, do well.
Thanks, Paul. Speak to you soon.
Cheers, then. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you. Bye.